Leviticus chapter 11. Now, we had gone through, oh, the different things that you can eat, things that, like the rabbit, that chew the cud but don't have a cloven hoof, so you can't eat those. And again, these, all of these dietary laws, you have to understand, this was the children of Israel had been taken out of Egypt. They'd been in Egypt for 400 years, and Egypt had all kinds of crazy medical ideas. You know, most of their cures involved the use of blood and worms and dung and all kinds of crazy stuff, which is right chock full of nasty stuff, which you don't want on you. And so the Lord was trying to spare his people from some of the problems that come from eating and putting the wrong stuff on you. So they'd gone through a list of different foods, and the Lord had, you know, he cared about his people enough to actually talk to them about the things that would be good for them and the things that would be not good for them to eat. And we had gone through the rabbit and the coney and the swine, no piggies. Now, and again, this doesn't apply to us, by the way. We are under grace. You know, we're going through 1 Timothy on Sunday nights, and we read in 1 Timothy, and I'll just read this, 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 1, where Paul had said, "I exhort, therefore, that first of all, supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men." He talked about intercessions, and you probably, if you've been in the church for a while, hear people about interceding in prayer, and it means, you know, going before God on someone else's behalf, and I'm just a prayer intercessor. And yeah, there are people who were called to that ministry. That's awesome. I'm glad. But that word intercessions, as far as prayer, is only used twice in the Bible. It's used right there, and then later on in 1 Timothy chapter 4, he uses it again, and he uses it in this context. He says, "Now the Spirit speaketh expressly that in the latter time some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils, speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their conscience seared with a hot iron, forbidding to marry, and commanding to abstain from meats, which God has created to be received with thanksgiving of them which believe and know the truth. For every creature of God is good, and nothing to be refused, if it be received with thanksgiving, for it is sanctified by the word of God and prayer." And the word prayer there is the same word that's translated intercessions in the other place. And so, you know, the Lord says, and I mean, you know, I've doing this whole project, had McDonald's more than I wanted lately, and you got to intercede for that stuff before you put it in your body, because it's just nasty. And so, but for us who are under grace, we're not bound by these laws. And yet, the children of Israel, when they were going into the new land, the Lord was preparing them. In fact, many of the things that he, you know, there, if you look at the medical reasons behind this food, it was to protect them from various diseases. We all know that we can eat pork, the other white meat, but we also know you cook your pork, because if you don't, you end up with trichinosis or whatever the other little worms, salmonella, whatever other worms are in them, because, well, they didn't know that. God knew that, and that's why he said, don't eat the pig, okay? You don't eat the pig, because you're not going to cook it right, and you're going to get worms, and you'll be sick. So I love you guys. Don't get worms. For us, we know to cook it now, so eat your worms. Enjoy. I mean, that's – so anyways, and we had gone through a lot, and we left off around Leviticus 11, 27, which said, "And whatsoever goeth upon his paws among all manner of beasts that go on all four, these are unclean unto you. Whoso toucheth their carcass shall be unclean until the even. And he that beareth the carcass of them shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the even. They are unclean to you." So, if, you know, the cats, dogs, stay away. "These also," in verse 29, "shall be unclean unto you among the creeping things that creep upon the earth, the weasel and the mouse and the tortoise after his kind." If you're a tortoise soup kind of person, a turtle soup, sorry, for the Israelites, it wasn't allowed. Or a mouse. If you see a mouse run through here, there were a few that lived in here and didn't like it when we moved in, and they're steadfastly refusing to go. We have a wonderful, I actually put it around the back because it was pretty nasty, but we have a wonderful homemade mouse trap where you take a 5-gallon pail and you put some water in the bottom, and then you take a wire and you string it across the top, and on the wire you put that through the middle of like a soda bottle, you know, that sits so it's hanging on the wire, but it'll spin, and you smear peanut butter all around it, and then you put a board on there, and the mice will run up there and they'll jump on that bottle to try to get the peanut butter and go, they'll fall backwards in and they'll drown in the bucket. And you can catch them, you know, you could fill up a bucket if there are enough around. But the one, there's been one little mouse thingy in here that just won't go for it. I've seen him around here and there, so if you see him, don't eat him, because the Lord said don't eat the mice. No turtle soup. The ferret, if you have a ferret at home and you are considering eating him, don't do it. The chameleon, if you can find him. The lizard. The snail. Escargot. And the mole. My cat won't eat a mole. He'll catch a mouse and eat it, but those little brown mole things, he'll catch them and just leave them as an offering on my doorstep, just to let him know that she still has worth. But apparently, Lord says you shouldn't eat those as well. The snails, I don't know who would eat snails. What would possess you to put a snail? I mean, there's so much good cow to be eaten. Why would you bother with a little slimy? I don't know. But apparently, the Lord knew. If he didn't say it, well, look, I mean, the French eat it. What were they thinking? I bet that would be good. Anyways, it says in verse 31, these are unclean to you among all that creep. Whosoever doth touch them when they are dead shall be unclean until the evening, and that's ceremonially unclean. And upon whatsoever any of them when they are dead doth fall, in other words, if a mouse was to drop out of the roof on you, a dead one, it shall be unclean, whether it be any vessel of wood or raiment or of skin, like a wineskin or a sack, whatsoever vessel it be, wherein any work is done, it must be put into water, and it shall be unclean until the even, so shall it be cleansed. If even one of those dead things bumps up against one of your bowls or something else, it's unclean, you need to clean it, because those are unclean animals. And every earthen vessel, whereinto any of them falleth, if you've got some pottery, whatsoever is in it shall be unclean, and you shall break it. You know, if a dead thing crawls into that, then kill it. Break the jug and be done with it. It says, of all meat which may be eaten, or all food that may be eaten, that on which such water cometh shall be unclean, and all drink that may be drunk in every such vessel shall be unclean. So if they get in the water that's in one of those, don't drink it. And everything whereupon any part of their carcass falleth shall be unclean, whether it be oven or ranges for pots, they shall be broken down, for they are unclean and shall be unclean unto you. Nevertheless, a fountain or pit, wherein there is plenty of water, shall be clean, but that which touches their carcass shall be unclean. And the idea is, because especially in the Middle East, the water is not quite as plentiful as it is here, they would have cisterns to hold the thing of water. And you think, well, if I've got, 5,000 gallons and a huge cistern and a mouse takes a dive in and dies, do I have to break the cistern and get, no. Saying if there's a whole bunch of water, just dip the thing out of there, chuck away whatever you use to dip it out with, you can keep drinking out of the cistern, it's probably dispersed enough. It says, and if any part of their carcass fall upon any sowing seed which is to be sown, it shall be clean. Dead mouse in the bag of grain that you're going to plant, no problem. But if any water be put upon the seed, and any part of their carcass fall thereon, it shall be unclean unto you. So if there's water on it, forget it. And if any beast of which you may eat die, in other words, any clean animal, the list that he said was okay to eat, like the cow, thank God, any of those, if you find one of those dead, if any beast of which you may eat die, he that touches the carcass thereof shall be unclean until the even. And he that eateth of the carcass of it shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the even. He also that beareth the carcass of it shall wash his clothes and shall be unclean until the evening. So if you come upon a dead animal, a lot of you guys know, have met Jeremy Boutaud. He's a friend of mine. I worked with him, and he's down at Calvary Bangor, one of the elders. Well, apparently the other day, stepped outside his front door, and somebody had shot a deer, and it had run up and just died on his front lawn, still warm, right in front of him. So I was online for about 2 minutes today as I was getting ready, and I said, so tell me about your deer. And he said, I opened the door, it was there, I hung it up, scun it out, end of story. I mean, that was it. Just, no, didn't even have to clean out a gun, just stepped out, and there's this dead deer right in front of him, brought it in. So it says if he'd found that, he could eat it. He could eat the carcass. He just needed to wash his clothes, and he'd be unclean till the evening. Every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth shall be an abomination. It shall not be eaten. Whatsoever goeth upon the belly, the snake, whatsoever goeth upon all four, and whatsoever hath more feet among all creeping things that creep upon the earth, them you shall not eat, for they are an abomination. Lay off the millipede, no centipedes. You shall not make yourselves abominable with any creeping thing that creepeth, neither shall you make yourselves unclean with them, that you should be defiled thereby. For I am the Lord your God, you shall therefore sanctify yourselves, you shall be holy, for I am holy. Neither shall you defile yourselves with any manner of creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. And the idea is not, it's the word sanctify, it means set apart. And it's not set apart away from, like, I'm not going to be like them and I'm going to get away from them. Sanctifying isn't getting away from, it's going to. You sanctify yourself by getting close to the Lord. You're separating yourself to the Lord, not from other people. He says, "For I am the Lord, God, the Lord that bringeth you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God. You shall therefore be holy, for I am holy." You know, and again, you got to apply this to our lives today. When we look at why we serve the Lord, why we do the things that we do. Okay, I don't drink, or I don't smoke, or I don't chew, or I don't go with those who do. Whatever it is that I don't do, it's not because that makes me more holy. But you look at what the Lord gave for a reason. He said it's because I delivered you out of Egypt. Because He delivered us, we set ourselves apart unto Him. You know, it was a choice. I had the liberty to do certain things, and I laid them down because the Lord, I wanted to be used by the Lord, and I had to lay them down. And it's, you know, for us as believers, certainly, Paul says in 2 Timothy that anyone that names the name of Christ, or it says, let anyone that nameth the name of Christ depart from iniquity. And certainly, when you put that title of Christian on, you're taking Christ's name on, and that should mean that there is something different about the way we live and the things that are not profitable. You know, Paul said all things are profitable, or all things are lawful, but not all things are profitable. And certainly there are certain liberties you have as a believer. You know, they're not a heaven and hell thing, but they're a health issue. They're a testimony issue. And for that reason, we need to set ourselves apart unto the Lord. He says, "This is the law of the beast," in verse 46, "and of the fowl, and of every living creature that moveth in the waters, and of every creature that creepeth upon the earth, to make a difference between the unclean and the clean, and between the beast that may be eaten and the beast that may not be eaten." And again, the Lord reaching all the way down to the dinner table, and He is letting His children know, look, I care about you, I care about what you eat, I want you to live a healthy life. I want to free you from the diseases of your neighbors. And you know, I think there's the same thing to be said for us. You know, if you go and you look at the statistics of AIDS, and you look at some of the countries in Africa now, there a lot of them have over a 33% rate of AIDS. One in every three people. You know, the number one cause of orphans and stuff is the fact that parents are dying of AIDS, and yet it's all stuff that's passed by. You know, you could pretty much get rid of it in a generation if everybody would just be monogamous, marry one man, one woman for life together, that's it, and not take intravenous drugs, it goes away. But it doesn't. And instead it grows and grows because people continually choose the thing that destroys them, and the Lord knows that. And the world is chasing after unholiness. But we should be different. You know, Ephesians 4:1 says, "I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of the vocation wherewith you are called." And again, we've said before that word to walk worthy means to walk. The word worthy is axios, and it's the word that was used in the marketplace when you wanted to buy a pound of grain. They take the balance scales, they put a 1 pound weight on there, and they start pouring grain on the other side until it balances out. And when it balanced, it would say, the guy would say axios, which means it's equal. And it would mean that your walk is equal to your talk, that the way that you say you are matches up with the way that you live. So we keep going on. In chapter 12, it says this, "And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, if a woman having conceived seed and born a man-child," little Tarzan there, little man-child, "then a man-cub, then he shall be unclean, then she shall be unclean 7 days according to the days of the separation, for her infirmity shall she be unclean. And in the eighth day, the flesh of his foreskin shall be circumcised." And so we're going to get into a few rules here that the Lord lays out for women when they have children. Now, again, when it talks about unclean, it's talking about ceremonially unclean, which means when you're unclean, you're supposed to be separated from your husband. When you're unclean, you're not supposed to go into the temple until you become clean again through a sacrifice. And he isn't saying here that marriage makes you unclean. If you're married and you're a woman, then you're unclean. No, it doesn't say that. It's not saying that if you are married and you have sex, then you're not. Sex is not unclean. It is a clean thing in the bounds of marriage. And childbirth doesn't make you unclean. It's not what it's saying. But you have to remember that all the way back to the curse, when sin came, that part of that curse was tied in with childbirth and the fact that sin is an inherited immune deficiency disease that we all have, where it's passed down from father to son and father to daughter, and you know, it's a kind of a reminder that we're all born unclean. And so if you have if she has a male child, then for the first 7 days she should be separated. And then after that, on the eighth day, it says he shall be circumcised. And that was something that the Lord told Abraham that all of his descendants should do as a sign of their covenant with God. Now, it's interesting. Medically, we know that the Lord just didn't arbitrarily pick the eighth day. Now, if you have a boy child and a baby, and you want to have a boy child in the hospital, and you want to have them circumcised, they'll do it on what, day one, day two, day three, depending on when they're born. But there's something they do first before they do that. They give them a shot of vitamin K, and the reason why is vitamin K is what allows your blood to coagulate, and you don't have any vitamin K develop in your body until the seventh day. So by the eighth day, your blood is ready to coagulate. And if you were to circumcise a child on the first day and didn't give him the shot of vitamin K, they could bleed to death. And so the Lord, knowing that, it's also when they look at the way pain sensors develop and the way different feelings in the extremities and stuff go, by the eighth day, the area that you're going to circumcise still isn't all that sensitive to the knife like it is further on down the road. So the Lord says, that's the day I want it done, because that's the day when you won't bleed to death, and that's the day when it won't hurt as bad as it could hurt if you waited. And so it's kind of interesting when you look at the Bible through a medical perspective. The Lord knows things that we didn't know until now. And then after that, it says in verse 4, and she shall then continue in the blood of her purifying 33 days, and she shall touch no hallowed thing nor come into the sanctuary until the days of her purifying be fulfilled. And so for 40 days, if she has a boy, she needs to stay outside the sanctuary until that time is up. But if she bear a maid child, female, then she shall be unclean for 2 weeks instead of one, as in her separation, and she shall continue in the blood of her purifying 66 days, 66 days. Instead of 33 plus 7 for a boy, 40 days, it's 66 plus 14 or 80 for a girl. And when the days of her purifying are fulfilled for a son or for a daughter, she shall bring a lamb of the first year for a burnt offering, and a young pigeon or a turtle dove for a sin offering unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation unto the priest. So you would say, well, why is it if you have a boy, you have to wait 40 days, but if you have a girl, you have to wait 80? I don't know. Well, actually, we're not exactly sure. I've heard certain people say, well, part of it has to do with the hormones, because when a woman has a little baby girl in her, then all of a sudden you've got two little hormone pumps going in there instead of one. And if you've ever been in a household with a couple women in there at the same time, you understand how all that works, and it's pretty tough for them to live together and to have that close for 9 months. I'm not sure, but whatever the case, the Lord in his wisdom has said, nope, this is the length is double for a woman having a female child instead of a male. But when those days are over, there is an offering that she brings, and it's either a young pigeon, it's a lamb of the first year, or a young pigeon or turtle dove for a sin offering under the door of the tabernacle of the congregation under the priest, who shall offer it before the Lord, it says in verse 7, and make an atonement for her, and she shall be cleansed from the issue of her blood. This is the law for her that has borne a male or a female. And it's interesting, one thing that just kind of jumped out at me about verse 7 is the fact that the Lord says, this is the law for her that is born a male or a female. Apparently, even at birth, you know whether you're a male or a female. You should be able to check at that time and know that you're a male from when you're born. You don't have to wait until the child grows old enough to tell you how they feel inside. It's nope, it's just a male. We can look at the plumbing before they can even speak and say, hey, that's a male or that's a female. And I think there's something to that personally. Interesting also in verse 8, it says, and if she be not able to bring a lamb, then she shall bring two turtle doves, or two turtles, it says, but two turtle doves, or two young pigeons, the one for a burnt offering and the other for a sin offering. And the priest shall make an atonement for her, and she shall be clean. It sounds like a phone. the interesting thing about that is if you were too poor to bring your lamb, then there's a provision in the law to bring two doves or to bring two pigeons for a burnt offering. And you know, in Luke chapter 2, verse 24, we read about Joseph and Mary when Jesus was born bringing that sacrifice. And they didn't bring a lamb. They brought two turtle doves because they were poor, apparently. For those who thought that Jesus was rich and Joseph was a successful carpenter and they were loaded too, wasn't the case. They brought the smaller offering because they didn't have the money. Now we come into chapter 13. Chapter 13 is a long chapter, and it is dealing with leprosy. This is the most detailed diagnosis documentation in the ancient world of any disease of any kind. The detail the Lord goes into in how the priest deals with leprosy. Now leprosy, a person who had leprosy, they were called the walking dead because they were alive, but it would eventually kill them, and it was just a matter of time. In fact, it was looked upon with religious connotations. It was the very finger of God that smote you. There must be sin in your life if you had leprosy. Leprosy, it's now, they call it Hansen's disease, because in 1873, Dr. Hansen was the one who isolated that, the leprosy bacterium, for the first time. It's an interesting disease, and we still don't understand it all the way. We're not exactly sure how it's transmitted. It's probably in a couple different ways. One is by touch. The other one is possibly airborne as well. Mostly it's just contact with another infected person is how you catch leprosy. And there is some question about maybe it attacking your extremities because the temperature of your hands is lower than the rest of your body temperature, and so it's easier to be attacked. In fact, they, in searching for test animals to work on, the one that they use now most more than anything else is an armadillo because it has a lower body temperature, and they can infect an armadillo with leprosy and get it to do things because it has a lower body temperature. And it really is a picture of sin throughout the Bible, the disease of sin. You don't see a leper being healed. You see them being cleansed when it happened. There was no cure for this disease. We still don't have a cure for this disease. We can abate this disease. What it does is it deadens your, one of the things it does is it attacks your nerves, so you lose feeling. Which, you know, here working, stuffing insulation, handling lumber, all that, you think, well, that would be a blessing, because I, you know, especially we're trying to sheetrock, and so you got to have this pouch full of sheetrock screws with your gun, and so you got to fill that up, and there's a bucket of screws, and so you dive your hand into that bucket and fill it up. Well, that stinking hurts. They all poke into the hangnails on you, and so you see guys doing it, and Bob's always taping his fingers up with electrical tape for when he's doing sheetrock, and so that he's not jabbing his finger continually. We think, well, gee, if I didn't have any pain, that'd be great, because then I could just grab those sheetrock screws and throw them in. But pain is actually a really good thing, because if you didn't feel that, then instead of just hitting your hangnail, you'd drive a screw right through your finger and not even know it and just keep going. And what happens with a person with leprosy, one of the things that happens is they wound themselves and they don't know. And so it gets worse and it gets infected. Frequently, people with leprosy will break fingers, break bones, and not know it. And so their hands will get gnarled up. They'll cut and they'll get infected. They just don't recognize. They'll burn themselves and they won't know because they lose the sensation of pain. And it's also a because of that, it's also a wasting or a rotting disease, and pieces fall off people. You know, you get white with leprosy, and people with leprosy would lose fingers, they would lose noses, they would lose extremities because they get wounded and wouldn't know. You know, you could fall asleep with a cut, and a rat could come over and chew on your nose all night, and you wouldn't know it. And you'd wake up, and you could eat your nose off. You'd never know. And so, nasty, I know, thought about it, but that's, you know, truly when you look at the scriptures and it talks about somebody full of leprosy, that's what it's talking about. It's nasty. And they, you know, we'll see what it means. But it's very similar to sin, because a lot of times sin is like a deadening as well. We'll see that as we get into this. So this is Leviticus chapter 13. It is a long chapter. I'm going to move a little fast because it's about diagnosis. And it had to be detailed. This was instruction for the priest. If you had a problem with leprosy, you didn't go to the doctor. You went to the priest, because the priest was the one who had to diagnose whether or not you had it. And if you had it, you were kicked outside the camp. And you lived in a leper colony where you would probably live off digging through the garbage or whatever other you could find. You couldn't be around other people. They would put them away from them because it was an infectious disease. It was said that you could smell a leper at like 100 feet because they were rotting. And so it was a nasty disease. And because of that, you don't want to you know, catch a pimple and be diagnosed with leprosy and kicked out of the camp and sent in with a leper call. You want to be darn sure that it's really leprosy. And so the Lord gives great detail to the descriptions of leprosy for the priest. So let's run into it. It says in verse 1, "And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, saying, When a man shall have in the skin of his flesh a rising, a scab, or a bright spot, and it be in the skin of his flesh like the plague of leprosy, then he shall be brought unto Aaron the priest, or unto one of his sons the priests. And the priest shall look on the plague in the skin of the flesh, and when the hair in the plague is turned white, and the plague in sight be deeper than the skin of his flesh, it is a plague of leprosy, and the priest shall look on him and pronounce him unclean. And if the bright spot be white in the skin of his flesh, and in sight be not deeper than the skin, and the hair thereof be not turned white, then the priest shall shut him up, him that hath the plague, 7 days, to see if it spreads. He'll set him up for seven days. And the priest shall look on him in the seventh day, and behold, if the plague in his sight be at a stay, and the plague spread not in his skin, then the priest shall shut him up 7 days more. So now he's 14 days. Put him aside. See if it spreads. And the priest shall look on him again the seventh day, and behold, if the plague be somewhat dark, in other words, if it's kind of faded, the spot on him, and the plague spread not in his skin, the priest shall pronounce him clean. It is but a scab. And he shall wash his clothes and be clean. And I'm sure after 14 days of on bated breath, is this going to spread? Is it a scab, or am I going to lose everything? Am I going to lose my job? Am I going to lose my family? Am I going to lose everything I've known and be an outcast? You'd be watching, you know, a watched scab never heals, while a watched pot never boils, and they'd be just checking that for 14 days. It says, but if the scab spread much abroad in the skin, and again, it's like sin. That's what it does. It spreads abroad. After that he hath been seen of the priest for his cleansing, he shall be seen of the priest again, and if the priest see that, behold, the scab spreadeth in the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is a leprosy. And when the plague of leprosy is in a man, then he shall be brought unto the priest, again, not to the doctor, and the priest shall see him, and behold, if the rising be white in the skin, and it have turned the hair white, and there be quick raw flesh in the rising, in other words, if it's broken open, it is an old leprosy in the skin of his flesh, and the priest shall pronounce him unclean, and shall not shut him up. For he's unclean. And when it's obvious, you got to deal with it. You know, if it's a touchy issue, let's just put it aside and we'll watch for a week and see if it really is. But if he comes in and he's got the big raw pussy oozing sore that looks like leprosy, it's leprosy. You know, and the same thing in the church. You know, as a believer, you see something in somebody's life and you think, is that something that I need to talk to them about? Well, you know, if it's a close one, you're not really sure, then you pray about it and you wait to see. And if it really is something, then there'll be confirmation. It'll come up again. You know, you don't just run out to look to confront somebody as soon as you see anything. But sometimes it's so glaringly obvious, you know, you see them walking out of Divas or you see them, you know, something like that, and you know they're not a delivery man, so chances are they're not where they're supposed to be. Then you can just go ahead and don't have to wait the week. I mean, that's kind of the idea. You know, if it's an obvious one, if it's raw, oozing flesh, deal with it. It says, if a leprosy break out abroad in the skin, and the leprosy cover all the skin of him that has the plague from his head, even his foot, wheresoever the priest looketh, then the priest shall consider, and behold, if the leprosy have covered all his flesh, he shall pronounce him clean that hath the plague. It is all turned white. He's clean. He's just got eczema. He's got the rash. You know, it's not that. But when raw flesh appeareth in him, he shall be unclean. And the priest shall see the raw flesh and pronounce him to be unclean, for the raw flesh is unclean. It is a leprosy. You know, Jesus recognized that. He said, Matthew 26:41, watch and pray that you enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. Romans 7:18 says, for I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwells no good thing. For the will is present with me, but how to perform that which is good I find not. And, you know, when we are in the raw flesh, we are unclean, we are leprous, we are full of sin. And that is why the flesh has to die. We have to crucify the flesh. Verse 16, or if the raw flesh turn again and be changed white unto white, he shall come unto the priest. And the priest shall see him, and behold, if the plague be turned into white, then the priest shall pronounce him clean that hath the plague. He is clean. In other words, if he was misdiagnosed, certainly fix it. Don't leave him left outside the camp. The flesh also, in which even the skin thereof was a boil and is healed. A boil, like a big pimple. And in the place of the boil, there be a white rising or a bright spot, white and somewhat reddish, to be showed to the priest. I mean, imagine the detail here. That's lovely. And if, when the priest seeth it, behold, it be in the sight lower than the skin, and the hair thereof be turned white, the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is a plague of leprosy, broken out of the boil. But if the priest look at it, and behold, there be no white hairs therein, if it be not lower than the skin, but be somewhat dark, then the priest shall shut him up 7 days. And if it spread much abroad in the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It's a plague. But if the bright spots stay in his place and spread not, it is a burning boil, and the priest shall pronounce him clean. Or if there be any flesh in the skin whereof there is a hot burning, in other words, it's all inflamed, and the quick flesh that burneth have a white bright spot, somewhat reddish or white, then the priest shall look upon it, and behold, if the hair in the bright spot be turned white, and it be in the sight deeper than the skin, it is a leprosy broken out of the burning, wherefore the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is the plague of leprosy. But if the priest look on it, and, you know, I read this, and I say, do you think when they were little kids growing up to be priests and they were, you know, they're part of the tribe of Levi and they're thinking, I'll get to serve in the temple. I'll get to be, you know, I'll be one ministering to the Lord. And instead their job is looking over scabs on people and making sure, you know, come here now. What is there any red? Is there any hair in that thing? You know, and digging around on. But you laugh, you know, I was coming up to Lincoln to teach a Bible study. I wasn't going to be stuffing insulation in cracks behind boards. I wasn't planning on that. I wasn't planning on, you know, dealing with other stuff that comes up. But part of the service of the Lord is dealing with the gross stuff of life. That is, you know, anybody can teach a Bible study. You read the Bible and you say what it says. What's hard is dealing with people's problems. And that's what we're called to as believers, is actually getting our hands dirty with one another and dealing with sin and dealing with the trials and pains of life. And here these priests are, their job is to dig around on the nasty spots and see whether somebody needs to be kicked out or not. 26, if the priest look on it and behold, there be no white hair in the bright spot and it be no lower than the other skin, but be somewhat dark, then the priest shall shut him up 7 days. And the priest shall look upon him the seventh day. And if it be spread much abroad in the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is a plague of leprosy. And if the bright spot stay in his place, it hasn't spread around, and spread not to the skin, but be somewhat dark, it is a rising of the burning, it's a swelling, and the priest shall pronounce him clean, for it is an inflammation of the burning. If a man or woman have a plague upon the head or the beard, so if you're a woman and you have a beard and there's a plague, and if you're a beard, if you're a carny woman and you're the bearded woman, and apparently the beard goes with just the man, then the priest shall see the plague, and behold, if it be in the sight deeper than the skin, and there be in it a yellow thin hair. See, if you're a woman with blonde hair, you're unclean. If you have blonde hair in your beard, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is a dry scald, even a leprosy upon the head or beard. And if the priest look on the plague of the scald, and behold, it be not in the sight deeper than the skin, and that there is no black hair in it, then the priest shall shut up him that hath the plague of the skull 7 days. And in the seventh day the priest shall look on the plague, and behold, if the skull spread not, and there be in it no yellow hair, and the skull be not in sight deeper than the skin, it isn't dug down in, he shall be shaven, but the skull he shall not shave. And the priest shall shut up him that hath the skull 7 days more, and in the seventh day the priest shall look on the skull, and behold, if the skull be not spread in the skin, nor be in sight deeper than the skin, then the priest shall call him clean, and he shall wash his clothes and be clean. So you got this place on your head with hair growing out of it, and it looks like it'd be it, but you're not sure. So what the priest does is he leaves that little island of hair with the scab under it alone, and he shaves the rest of your head. And then you're just left with this tuft out of your head for 7 days because they want to see if it's growing. And you know, so if it hasn't spread outside the patch of grass growing out of your head, then we know it's not the plague. But if it's spreading, then we put them aside. I mean, that's what it says. We got to be sure, you know, because it could be eczema. So we just shave that head down and leave the patch because you won't be touching that. And wait a week. But if the skull spread, in verse 35, much in the skin after his cleansing, then the priest shall look on him, and behold, If the skull be spread in the skin, the priest shall not seek for yellow hair. He's clean. He's unclean. Excuse me. But if the skull be, in other words, again, you ain't got to look for the yellow hair. If it's already spreading around, don't bother looking for more signs. Deal with it. But if the skull be in his sight at a stay, it hasn't spread, and that there is black hair grown therein, the skull is healed, and he is clean, and the priest shall pronounce him clean. No medicine, no treatment. You're either clean or you're not. If a man also or a woman have in the skin of their flesh bright spots, even white bright spots, then the priest shall look, and behold, if the bright spots in the skin of their flesh be darkish white, it's a freckled spot that groweth in the skin, he's clean. You guys have seen, especially with older people, as you get old and you start to age, you get spots, sometimes they're brown, sometimes they're white, where just like the pigment dies and you've got these little, you know, an older person with white spots all over their hands. This was talking about. Because you don't want to be separated from your whole family and never see your wife or kids again, ever, because you get some age spots, or we'd all be separate and alone, you know. But no, it could be just a freckle spot, like it says. And the man whose hair has fallen off his head, he's bald, yet he's clean. Jamie, he's bald, but yet he's clean, see. And he that hath hair fallen off from the part of his head toward his face, he's forehead bald, yet he's clean. So some of you, your forehead bald, but yet you're clean. Receding hair. Covered in the law. If there be in the bald head or the bald forehead a white reddish sore, it is a leprosy sprung up in his bald head or his bald forehead. Then the priest shall look upon it, and behold, everyone will look upon it actually if it's in the bald forehead, but the priest shall look upon it, and behold, if the rising of the sore be white reddish in the bald head or in his bald forehead. Oh, work with me here. As the leprosy appeareth in the skin of the flesh, he's a leprous man. He is unclean. The priest shall pronounce him utterly unclean. His plague is in his head. Sounds like me. My plague's in my head. And the leper in whom the plague is, his clothes shall be rent and his head bare, and he shall put a covering on his upper lip and shall cry, unclean, unclean. And the covering on his upper lip, he'll actually put something over his mouth in case, so he's not sneezing leprosy on you. And that's what you'd have to do. You'd have, if you were going around anywhere, any people where the law was, you would have to yell, unclean, unclean, wherever you were. Now, you'd have to be wondering at this point, what did I do to get this thing? Because I've always been told that this is the finger of God. God's mad at me, and it's caused by sin. Whenever I saw a leper when I was growing up, that was somebody who was sinful and God was mad at. That's why they had leprosy. Now I got leprosy, and I got to run around and tell everybody everywhere I go, unclean, unclean, unclean. But it wasn't because God was mad at him. It says in verse 46, all the days wherein the plague shall be in him, he shall be defiled, he's unclean, he shall dwell alone without the camp, outside shall his habitation be. The garment also that the plague of leprosy is in, whether it be a woolen garment or a linen garment, whether it be in the warp or woof of linen or of woolen, whether in the skin or of anything made with skin. And he's going to start talking about the plague of leprosy actually being in some clothing. And of course, it, when you're looking at leprosy as a type of sin throughout the Bible, sometimes it's not just in us, but it's in our surroundings or it's in the things we put around ourselves. That's what's our exterior versus the interior, that's what's infected. You know, and again, the leprosy being a deadening of the nerves, sin is a deadening thing. Hebrews 3:13 says, but exhort one another daily, while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. And sin is extremely deceitful, and you can trick yourself into thinking, oh, I don't have a problem. Oh, that's really no problem. I'm okay. And the leper thinks he's okay too, but he might be walking on a broken foot. And won't be walking on an open sore and not know it because he's dead to it. It says the garment that also in verse 47 that the plague of leprosy is in, whether it be a woolen garment or linen garment, whether it be in the warp or the woof of the linen or the woolen, or whether in a skin, something leather, or in anything made of skin. And if the plague be greenish or reddish in the garment or in the skin, either in the warp or in the woof or in anything of skin, it is a plague of leprosy and shall be showed unto the priest. And the priest shall look upon the plague and shut up it that hath the plague 7 days. So if you have something that looks like you got leprosy in your coat, you bring your coat to the priest and say, does this look like leprosy to you? Personally, if I was to see something in my coat that looked like leprosy, it wouldn't be my coat anymore. It would be a garbage thing, and now I would have a new coat that has no leprosy in it. I wouldn't be bringing anything to the priest because then he'd be looking at me for them red spots on my bald forehead, and I don't want none of that, so we just throw that away. But apparently, if you only have one coat, you want to make sure it's not just, you know, coffee stain on your coat. So you take it to the priest, and he shuts it up for a week to watch it. It says, and he shall look upon the plague on the seventh day, if the plague be spread in the garment, either in the warp or the woof. And the warp and the woof is weaving. The warp, I believe, is the vertical. Is that the way that works? And the woof is the horizontal, like when you're weaving a rug or something, the woof is horizontal, warp is vertical. And it says, either way, if it's up, going up or down or across, in a skin, that's, you know, like in leather, or in any work that is made of skin, the plague is a fretting leprosy. It is unclean. And fretting means it's an active leprosy. It's growing. He shall therefore burn that garment. I would have started with that personally, but that's whether warp or woof and woolen or linen or anything of skin wherein the plague is, for it is a fretting leprosy and shall be burnt in the fire. Now, interesting you think about that, but obviously this was in there because there are a lot of people who say, there's nothing wrong with that coat. I'm wearing it. It's got a little spot in it, so it's bigger than yesterday. I'm wearing that coat, you know, and it's leprosy, and they don't understand. When you look at that as a type of sin, there are us who are whole. We don't have leprosy as a person, but there might be something that we're wearing or that we're putting on and keeping around us that isn't. It's got the plague. And how many Christians you know say, well, I'm not getting rid of that. I like that. That's my favorite. It's the most comfortable thing I have. I drink a little bit, or I just smoke a little bit of pot, or whatever your little thing is, or whatever. And, we are told in Romans 13:14, but put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ, and make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. What we're supposed to be clothing ourselves with is Christ, not our own stuff, not our own deeds. We're told in Isaiah 64, we're all as an unclean thing. All our righteousnesses are as filthy rags. And, you know, the idea is, as believers, we should be sanctified. We should not be taking anything. Even if we have been clean ourselves, why would we continue dressing ourselves up in stuff that is unclean? It says in verse 53, and the priest shall look, and behold, the plague be not spread in the garment, either in the warp or in the woof or in anything of skin. Then the priest shall command that they wash the thing wherein the plague is in, and he shall shut it up 7 days more. And the priest shall look on the plague after that is washed, and behold, if the plague have not changed his color, and the plague be not spread, it is unclean. Thou shalt burn it in the fire. It is a fret inward, whether it be bare within or without. And if the priest look, and behold, the plague be somewhat dark after the washing of it, then he shall rend it out of the garment, or out of the skin, or out of the warp, or out of the woof. And if it appears still in the garment, so now you're going to tear a chunk out. Nope, still growing. I don't know why. You must really like that garment. And if it appears still in the garment, either in the warp or in the woof or in anything of skin, it is a spreading plague. Thou shalt burn that wherein the plague is with the fire. Why would you even touch it? And the garment, either warp or woof or whatsoever thing of skin it be, which thou shalt wash, if the plague be departed from them, then it shall be washed the second time and shall be clean. This is the law of the plague of leprosy in a garment of woolen linen, either warp or woof or anything of skins, to pronounce it clean or to pronounce it unclean. Now, I just want to go a couple verses into chapter 14 to show you the significance of this. And here's the deal. Leprosy, it's a type of sin. You never see anywhere in the Bible anybody being healed of leprosy. You see people being cleansed of leprosy. You see, and even then, well, look at chapter 14. It says this. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, this shall be the law of the leper in the day of his cleansing. He shall be brought unto the priest. And the priest shall go forth out of the camp, and the priest shall look, and behold, if the plague of leprosy be healed in the leper, then shall the priest command to take for him that is to be cleansed two birds alive and clean, and cedar wood, and scarlet, and hyssop. And the priest shall command that one of the birds be killed in an earthen vessel over running water. As for the living bird, he shall take it, and the cedar wood, and the scarlet, and the hyssop, and shall dip them and the living bird in the blood of the bird that was killed over the running water. And he shall sprinkle upon him that is to be cleansed from the leprosy 7 times, and shall pronounce him clean, and shall let the living bird loose in the open field. Now, leprosy is an incurable disease. And yet there's a provision in the law of if you are a leper and you are cleansed, then this is what you do. You go to the priest and he'll check you out and then he'll do this thing. And 14 is all about it. We'll get into it next week. But why would the Lord put that in there if it's an incurable disease? In the Old Testament, the only, and certainly there might have been misdiagnoses that aren't recorded in the Bible. There are none of those where he said, well, that look, yeah, you're leprosy, you're out, but then the boil goes away, so you go back and say, oh, I was wrong. But there's only two people that ever get leprosy in the Old Testament and then are cleansed from it. One was Miriam, when she kind of led a little rebellion against Moses, and God struck her with leprosy and made them put her out of the camp for 7 days, and then Moses prayed for her, and she was healed, and she was brought back. But there was no talk of any priest, any sacrifice, anything like that. The other was not an Israelite at all, but he was, I think, an Assyrian. It was Naaman. And he went and was cleansed. He went to Elisha, and he said, I'll just go wash in the river and seven times and you'll be healed. And he first got mad and went away because it seemed too easy, but then finally a servant talked him into doing it and he was cleansed. But he wasn't an Israelite, so there was no sacrifice. But this was never done. It was never brought in there. And my personal opinion is this section of Scripture was written specifically for a couple people, Annas and Caiaphas. You remember we're going through on Sunday mornings we're going through the Gospels, we're coming up to the crucifixion, and when Jesus was taken, he was brought before the high priest, which was Caiaphas at the time. Annas was his father-in-law. Well, what it said to happen was when this happened, you were to go to the high priest. And in Luke chapter 5 is where you see somebody healed of leprosy. And it says this, Luke chapter 5, verse 12. Let me read it to you. And it came to pass when he was in a certain city, behold, a man full of leprosy. Full of leprosy meaning he was full on, nose falling off, fingers falling off, skanky, smell him 100 feet away, covered in rags, outside the camp, full, missing pieces, leper. It says he came, who seeing Jesus fell on his face, some of it may have stayed in the ground, I don't know, and besought him, saying, Lord, if thou wilt, thou can make me clean. And he put forth his hand and touched him, saying, I will, be thou clean. And immediately the leprosy departed from him. And he charged him to tell no man. Now, he healed him, which means if he had no nose, he now has a nose. If he had no fingers, then he has fingers again. I mean, it's like, boom, here's a guy who's covered with these pussy, scabby, reddish, blonde hair growing, scab, scaly, falling off to... He's pink and healthy. And Jesus says, don't tell anybody. Okay, you know, do I have to say anything? They've been looking at my scabs. But don't tell anybody, he says, tell no man, but go and show thyself to the priest and offer for thy cleansing according as Moses commanded for a testimony unto them. And so here's this provision in the law that, for all we know, has never been done in a couple thousand years since it was instituted by Moses. The high priest has never had to do this because no one's ever been cleansed. It's incurable. And all of a sudden, hello? Yeah, it's me. It's Bill. You remember? Bill, are you not... Remember, no nose, my fake Bill. Oh, Bill, the leper, right. You look pretty, where's the nose? Nice nose. I mean, and all of a sudden, yeah, I've been cleansed. I brought my stuff. Here's my thing. I want to do what? Well, Jesus said there was something in the law. Well, we got to go look it up. And they go look it up because nobody's ever done it. And all of a sudden, these lepers start showing up at the door. Never happened. And all of a sudden, they're getting leper after leper. And they're saying, something's going on. Because people are getting cleaned from leprosy. That this has never happened. And it was a testimony unto them. And when you look at the picture that's in this, I mean, look what you're supposed to do if you've been clean. You take two birds, and you take some wood, a cross, and you take scarlet, like red, like blood, and you take hyssop. Hyssop was the thing that the sponge thing they put up to his mouth when he's on the cross. And the priest shall command that one of the birds be killed in an earthen vessel, like God coming down and taking on a body of flesh, an earthen vessel, over running water, picture of the Holy Spirit. And then the living bird, he takes that, and the cedar wood, and the scarlet, and the hyssop, and dips them into the living bird into the blood, was killed over the running water, and sprinkle upon him that is to be cleansed from the leprosy seven times, pronounce him clean, and shall let the living bird loose in the open field. And if we are a Christian, that's us. We have been dipped in the blood of a clean sacrifice, and we're clean. We've been cleansed of our incurable disease. You know, tonight, just so happens, our first meeting in here is on the first Thursday of the month, and we do communion on the first Thursday of the month. If you guys would bring that in, I mean, I'm glad it's kind of cold in here and we're celebrating being in a new building and it's raining and it's probably leaking over there and whatever else. But the thing that makes this thing anything other than a building is the fact that the Lord is here with us. And the fact that he's here with us, sinful people, is a sign that we've been cleansed from our sin. And that is why we remember communion. Go ahead, pass it out. Bob's doing children's ministry tonight because we had a cancellation, so you don't want to hear me sing, and I don't want to sing. So we'll just pass it out. We'll pray, and we'll do this thing together. You know what it represents. And this is just representing that earthen vessel that was broken for us. It was representing the blood of that one sacrifice that was pure that we've been dipped into and set free. And, you know, let me encourage you. That is what our message is. That is what our purpose for being here is. That is what our hope is that everybody in this town will know that there is a way to be cleansed from your incurable disease, that there is a way to be set free. There's been a provision made. And, you know, we should be celebrating the fact that we're clean. Make sense? You're just cold. You want me to just stop?